This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Raw. From Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Raw. From Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Welcome everybody. All you freeloaders out there, it is the Stranger Things edition of Rewind to Raw.
I suppose so. I haven't seen beyond the first season, so it's not.
I didn't even know you had seen the first season.
Yeah, of course. Well, who hasn't seen a little bit of Stranger Things?
Well, we will talk about the aesthetics of the show, of the Stranger Things tie-in. If you're just joining us now and you're saying, hey, where's all my news? What can I do to get more out of John Pollock and Wei Ting? Well, you can get the XL edition of Rewind to Raw by becoming a member at postwrestlingcafe.com. We just did about 40 minutes going through a very busy day of news from Shinsuke Nakamura speaking to Tokyo Sports after Hiroshi Tanahashi's retirement, a big rundown of New Japan's New Year Dash card, which had its best attendance since 2020. A lot of news coming out of that show. Some potential exits, some new groups, and Gabe Kidd challenging Andrade, whatever the fuck, for a match on February the 11th. Aaron Wolf's next opponent, and even more on the Death Vegas Invitational. A show that I'm thinking of just
You're going to go?
I'm not going, but I think you and I... We have to watch this show.
I'm down for that.
Mania weekend, okay?
You're going to regret saying that because that's going to be such a busy weekend, but yes.
What day is the 16th on? Is that I feel that's before like the weekend. I feel like that's the Thursday or Friday, but I don't know.
16th in April? It's the Thursday.
It's a Thursday. All right. They're smart. They're getting in there before it gets...
Thursday's pretty busy, man. Like, it's before SmackDown, sure. It's before WrestleMania, but yeah, Thursday is a pretty busy day.
I'll take this over SmackDown. I think our audience will too.
Okay. Yeah.
Plus, Saya Kamatani taking a minimal break from Stardom. Discussion on Jordan Grace and AI technology and how we can look at it. If you are a performer, specifically one in like WWE, for instance, I think this is a really interesting story to follow. Probably not the last time that we're going to be discussing this. And going over some departures, both from AEW and WWE. All of that can be yours. PostWrestlingCafe.com. What a week it is if you are so inclined. On the cafe, you have got me and Wei's review of Wrestle Kingdom. As well as a free edition covering Wrestle Kingdom. We have double reviews, Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson doing a great job of running down the show so you can have all perspectives on Wrestle Kingdom. And then this week, we have got Thursday, live at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, a first ever live edition of the MMA Prediction Show. I'm going to be joined by Ariel Helwani. We're going to go over his 2025 predictions, and then we are going to play a new game of likely, unlikely for the new year ahead at the Olympic bound with the Olympic bound Ariel Helwani, who will be representing CBC next month at the Winter Olympics. So he will be joining me this Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern time on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. Now, that sounds like a great Thursday. Folks, that's just the start because Thursday night, I'm joining Wei Ting and Brandon from New Jersey. We're going to pop in Wei's VHS machine and we're going to turn on, is it the 1990 and 1995 Royal Rumble matches? We allowed Brandon to pick two.
Yeah, although I think we strongly suggested them just given what we've reviewed in the past and or haven't reviewed yet in the past.
All right, so we are going to watch the 1990, the match itself. We're not watching these whole shows. The matches. Yeah. And the 95 one, it's a condensed Rumble. This was a thin roster and thus some very short interval times. So that is happening Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. The MMA Prediction Show is free for everyone. The live watch-along, that is for cafe members. So there you go, as you can see in bold right there. I'm looking forward to these. It's a... it's usually fun catching up with Brandon, and probably by the end of the second Rumble, I'll be ready to say goodbye.
Brandon from New Jersey and Ariel Helwani on the same day.
What a contrast. Yeah. Imagine I mixed them up and I had Brandon on for the prediction show and then Ariel does the Rumble with us.
I think that would be just as fun.
Yes. Yeah. So all of that is happening on Thursday. And then we head into the weekend where it's always busy. And a shout out to our friends, WH Park, Rich Fan. They are reviewing what sounds like just the worst comic-based films. They did Captain America a few weeks ago, the 1990 version, which does exist. And now they are reviewing a 1989 Punisher film. Starring, that, again, I have not seen. Am I wrong?
No, you have not seen it. No, this is starring Dolph Lundgren. From 1989 as Frank Castle, the Punisher.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
I would not have been able to guess that.
Well, if he dies.
He dies with a big fucking gun. Look at the size of that barrel. Holy shit. Okay, well, that's coming up Tuesday. We serve all of your tastes covered at the Post Wrestling Cafe. On to Raw we go. The Stranger Things edition. WrestleTick's last number, 13,224. The last time they ran this building was August 4th of last year for Raw that did 11,219. So a 2,000 increase there. Cole called it a sellout and even listed off 14,728. So a lot of people here at the Barclays Center. And it is the Stranger Things edition. So we get the long shot towards the stage and then the camera flips over. We go into the upside down as the Stranger Thing theme begins and Michael Cole and Graves come out of the WSQK van, which is like the decoy radio station in Stranger Things.
Yes, I figured.
Wade was going to explain that, but I thought I would. And they do an intro. During the walk-ins to the building, they're making references like "Friends Do Lie" and "The Best in This World." CM Punk, Graves seemed to be a lot more into this, and Michael Cole was like, "Just told like this is a really popular show. Just go with what Corey says." Graves says, "We're not in Hawkins anymore. We're in Brooklyn." And listen, I'm sure there were people that probably hated this. If you don't watch Stranger Things, maybe this is a better question for you. Did this ever feel like overbearing or like too much?
I would actually say it felt underbearing. I was expecting a whole lot more integration.
I agreed.
Than all of this. I mean, really, like the whole Stranger Things of it all was pretty much condensed to like this opening. You know, beyond this, you had like,
they did the
titles.
Chapter breaks,
chapter titles. You know, coming back from commercial, that was kind of cute. But being like, you didn't really have that much more like integration of the show into the rest of it all. Like, I thought they could have had a lot more fun with it. Instead, it was really just kind of kept to like essentially the set, the music, really all the dressing, you know, for the show, and not really with the content itself.
Yeah, it's like, I can imagine a lot of times they would say, hey, there's going to be people that are just not going to understand all this. It's like Stranger Things is the most popular show in the world. If there's a show that we could bank on that most people are going to be aware of, this is probably the show.
It's the entire point of doing a Stranger Things edition of the show to Trojan horse a Stranger Things fan to watch and sample your edition of Raw. So yeah, I don't know. I don't think they would have that concern.
Yeah. I was actually expecting more than, yeah, what they did, especially based on the opening. Like, they did do like a fine job. Like, they had like a set design and, you know, they, you know, it looked like they put work into the construction of this set. And like the crowd even like popped when they first heard the music. But really, the rest was just left to like, you know, decoration on the desk and, you know, the chapters.
Now, let's also remember, like, this is also the Netflix anniversary show, and last year's version of this show, I mean, was very much promoted, but I think resulted in one of the more unsatisfying viewing experiences for at least a typical WWE fan, in that, if you remember, it was just, like, lined with celebrity, 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 very low on, I would say.
Real American beer.
Yeah, well, one of the moments.
It's the 1 year anniversary of that sponsorship.
That is that is correct. This year, I felt like, I mean, number one, the stakes weren't as high because this was at the premiere. No celebrities,
Elle Duncan was there with her custom Stranger Things title belt.
How could I forget? But instead, they delivered like what really felt like a typical edition of the show. So I wonder if there was some thought into thinking, hey, like let's make this about as normal of an edition of Raw, safer, like, you know, this opening. If that was the case, I feel like they could have found a better middle ground to integrate at least a bit more of the theme to the rest of the show. Maybe like even have the cast do stuff, but they didn't.
I don't think they were going to have access to the. It's tough because it's like the series is over now. Like they're done doing promotion for. This like everything was built towards like the finale last week. So it's almost like this is kind of after the fact that they're doing this tie-in. It almost would have made more sense to be a week ago before the big finale, but
it's the
whatever.
Anniversary.
I don't think they were looking at Raw as, you know, the success or failure of Stranger Things. So Kabuki Warriors against Rhea Ripley and Io Sky opens the show. 16 and a half minute match, and this is where Io Sky hits a sling blade, as Graves says, the sling blade taught to her by Hiroshi Tanahashi, who just retired.
Is that true? Do they have a history? I don't know.
I don't know. I guess it's possible that, like, certainly they were living in Japan at the same time. Can I buy that they were in the same dojo together or had acquaintances that they trained together? Possible. Like, I can't deny that that's it. This link to Tanahashi I'd never heard before, so
look at all this history, you know, sharing a magazine covers together and all this stuff. I mean, yeah,
okay, we have proof that they met maybe backstage at a show. So
let's see what the Io Sky tweeted about Tanahashi. Okay, January 4th, 2026, you have given wonderful influence to a tremendous number of pro wrestlers. I am one of them. The title of It's Joe, bestowed upon me by Issei in an interview 11 years ago, is a lifelong treasure to me. So I guess he gave her a nickname many years ago.
Okay. So
there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So I could buy it.
I give the benefit of the doubt here. It was more or less interesting that much like when Sting retired, it did get a mention the next Raw.
Yeah. No, they weren't about to mention it before the event. Like AEW wasn't really going to promote Wrestle Kingdom before the event.
But they come off like great people for bringing up the retirement and not contributing to the retirement.
Mm-hmm.
So Sky's got her back all injured from the weeks of attacks, and she gets hit with a double stomp, and Kairi goes for the Boston Crab. You know what she's been watching over the last couple of days. And she pulls back so far that she loses the grip on the Boston Crab, allowing Io out to tag Rhea. Rhea hits a razor's edge to Sane. There's a missile dropkick by Sky, but she stumbles around for the cover, only getting a two. But the crowd, like, some of these WWE matches, like, I'm not even knocking it, but it's like, it's just a race to the near falls, and then it's without fail. Like, the crowd, that's what they're there for. They love their near falls, and it works. So I'm not going to knock it, but it just feels as though, like, these fans are just tapping their watch. It's like, when can we just watch the cool kickouts? And then that was Punk and Breaker. As soon as you got to that, crowd explodes. So it works.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's just because it's a market that probably, I mean, has seen a lot of wrestling, but they certainly recognize the pattern of a match and don't really see much value, or at least not enough reason to get on your feet and actually make noise for the early portions of the match.
So there's a riptide to Sane. Asuka breaks it up. There's a code breaker onto Rhea for a two count, and then a double team insane elbow. Sky is in now for the save, and it ends with Sky and Asuka exchanging covers. Asuka is sent out, and they hit a riptide over the moonsault onto Asuka, and Rhea gets the pinfall in 16 minutes and 28 seconds. So much like last year's premiere on Netflix, Rhea Ripley winning a title, and her and Io Sky are the women's champions, and a good match that I thought they had. They got plenty of time here, 16 and a half minutes, and the crowd was into it, and man, they loved those near falls.
I thought it was a very strong match. I mean, this is a show that, you know, if you're trying to cater more towards a casual audience than your typical Raw, I think to lead off with this level of action with the crossover star power of a Rhea Ripley and just this incredible action provided by all four of them, I thought was a great choice. You gave a big title change here. You have great chemistry from really like EO with either of the Kabuki Warriors as always. So I thought an excellent match. And well, we learned from SmackDown that Charlotte and Alexa might be next.
Yes, yes. I would imagine all of these teams are going to be involved here, and you can get multiple matches out of them, and you've got the belts on like a solid team that you can. I think these two are pretty much co-brands at this point.
Yeah, I think this, I mean, not that it matters, but this could mean more Rhea and Io over on SmackDown.
Yes,
and I'm sure Damian Priest will be very happy about that.
Yes, yes, that's Rhea is his lifeline. Throughout the month of January, you have the chance to lock in your subscription at the Post Wrestling Cafe for all of 2026 before the price increase takes effect February the 1st. Simply sign up before February 1st and you will lock in that price all year long. If that's not enough, this month we have the annual Best and Worst of Show as we get together with the Poison Rana crew to look back at 2025. We're also doing live watch-alongs of the Royal Rumbles from 1990 and 1995 with Brandon from New Jersey, a retrospective on the Tanahashi-Okada rivalry, plus reaction to Wrestle Kingdom 20, a review of TNA's debut on AMC, and much more, including TNA Genesis, UFC 324. It's all found at postwrestlingcafe.com. Pierce meets with Ripley and Sky backstage, and Gunther walks in, and Pierce warns him, there's a lot of eyes on you tonight. Gunther is probably like, have you seen the Tudum top 10 rankings? I don't know about that, Adam Pierce. And he says, the locker room hasn't liked the disrespect you've shown since beating John Cena, so I'd advise you to show some respect. And he laughs this off as he walks towards the entrance. I mean, this is just ridiculous. Like, what
this is Gunther's whole gimmick, like coming off of the Cena match, is that he's too disrespectful. Okay. And I guess like that's because he keeps saying Cena tapped like a little bitch. But like, is that really so out of line for a professional wrestling heel? Like, in this world, is this really all that disrespectful? Like, he just seems pretty normal. Like, you know, villain speak to me.
It's like, I'm sure John's fine with it. Gunther comes out and he's talks about what Pierce had mentioned to him, and he's interrupted by AJ Styles. Gunther says, I am the greatest wrestler in this company, including you. And he keeps cutting off AJ Styles, who can't speak, and says he tapped John Cena out like a little bitch. So AJ slaps him, stares at Gunther, says, I knew you'd do nothing. Hail. And they go nose to nose, and Gunther leaves with more to come, because we're in the back. Adam Pearce had the most like mind-numbing conversation with Ivy Nile. Ivy is explaining, I'm not going to the back of the line. Pearce is stating, well, there's nothing I can do until tonight's Intercontinental title match happens and we have a winner. She says, yeah, but I'm not going to the back of the line. I'm like, what would prompt you to go to the back of the line?
So what was her last match? Remind me. I've already forgotten. Like, didn't she lose or something like a title challenge?
You're asking me to look
only
up.
Two weeks ago, I bet.
Nile.
Ivy Nile cage match. Okay, so yeah, she lost to Maxine.
So she doesn't want to go to the back of the line because she got a title match like 2 weeks ago.
She must have got screwed somehow, right? No. Oh man, I don't want to go back to my notes, but okay, she doesn't want to, she wants a rematch for whatever reason.
Okay,
is what she's saying. Yeah.
I don't care. I definitely don't care. Gunther comes in. He wants AJ Styles. AJ appears. The match is made for next week in Dusseldorf, Germany.
Yeah. The expected time that you thought they would get to this? I mean, we maybe would have even speculated.
I think this is going to set up a bigger match. Okay. I don't think this is going to be one and done. I think next week is either an angle or something in which it sets up a rematch at one of the big shows this month. That would be my thought.
I could totally do a series with this. I'm very curious to see what this match looks like.
Maxine Dupri and Becky Lynch for the Intercontinental title. Becky is wearing Star Trek Starfleet gear, which I'm surprised that didn't get into the way of the Stranger Things arrangement. It's like, we're not promoting other bullshit in outer space. So they come back from break. They're both down.
She's in the new Star Trek, by the way.
Yes. They're both down. There was a light Y2J chant here. And I actually thought there would be more of these chants throughout the show. This was kind of it. Maxine calls on her to keep coming. Again, she yells. The straps come down. She hooks Becky's arms. And she, like, she ties them up like she's going for a backslide. And then she just jumps and comes down on her ass.
It was some version of, like, I mean, you remember, like, the Widow's Peak? You know, like, Victoria's move? Like,
yeah, but Becky didn't go up for this.
I thought it was a bad camera angle to capture it, but it also didn't necessarily look that great. But I thought it was, like, she intended for this move to be like that. But Graves certainly gave it the, or it was Graves or Cole who gave
Graves.
It the...
Graves. Not entirely sure what that was.
Yeah, I kind of buried it all. So
I mean, I'd have to relook at this because I rewound it and I did not know what the objective here was. Maxine goes to the ankle lock and she is certainly like watching all her like Kurt Angle transitions, and she has a ways to go on some of like these, just going from move to move. Like it's just, it's still a process for her. She gets lifted for a powerbomb and then rolls off the shoulders into the ankle lock. And then with the ankle lock applied, Becky bridges on top while the ankle lock is still locked on, grabs the rope for leverage, pinning her in 11 minutes and 33 seconds. And that was it. They put the belt on Becky and that was that.
Yeah. I mean, this seems like an end to this program. We've had four matches between these two.
I think this was the fourth.
Yeah. I thought the finish was good with Becky cheating to win. I mean, this was not even, you know, you're still protecting Maxine in a way here, but I also don't think that they'll be going back to this anytime soon. I think these two have shown like good chemistry in the past, and I thought this match had it too. Maxine has certainly advanced from being, you know, what you would consider maybe the worst wrestler on the roster to being competent to now, I would even say like slightly above competent. I think she's worked really, really hard at improving her in-ring abilities, and I thought it showed. But I also think like the key ingredient to her success is having an engaged crowd that is there for this underdog character of hers. And tonight was not one of those. Like this was not a crowd that I thought cared about Maxine, nor took her seriously as a competitor. So, you know, I think her gimmick worked best when she was an underdog and like felt, you know, had that fish out of water appeal. And she really has not had that since her rebranding as this like actually competitive version of herself. Of course, like I thought it was worthwhile to try, but I don't necessarily think it's connected. I don't think it, like, if the audience wants great wrestling, I mean, there are great wrestlers on this show. And I think the gulf between what Maxine is able to represent, as improved as she may be, to like an EO Sky is still way too far for, I think, the audience to really take her seriously for. So I think she has to be more than just a straightforward competitive wrestler to be a compelling character. So we'll see if they adjust her at all, or if they continue to send her back down the card. Like, I think she's an interesting case.
If I were EO Sky, I would be sending Maxine for some privates with a recently retired senpai. And maybe Maxine can get a nickname and learn a sling blade or two and some other maneuvers. Send her away for 6 months.
A trip to Japan?
Yes.
Yeah.
All expenses paid by EO Sky.
Well, I mean, I'm sure Stardom or Marigold would love to have her.
Obafemi promo, same one we've been seeing every week. And Stephanie Vaquer is seen in a walking boot backstage and walks past the Creeds, who are in a boat.
Like, isn't that a Stranger Things thing?
It probably is, yes. Yeah. So I'm glad they got on the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're Unreal. Still waiting for Chad Gable.
They're like, how are you doing? Unreal trailer. And then did you watch the Unreal trailer today? Any thoughts on the show?
I think as expected, it was like largely built around the whole Seth Rollins thing is like the big, you know, gotcha.
The big reveal. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Moment. So I would just, I hope you're not too aggravated by what you're going to see, because I could see it being.
No, I know what it's going to be, so I'm watching it with that knowledge. Yes.
They're also going to touch on R-Truth.
Yeah, it seems like R-Truth. It feels like Trinity like getting pregnant, that'll be a focus as well.
So her interview suggested that there was something leading to her walking out. Now, I don't know, like they made the trailer made it seem like she was walking out in support of R-Truth or something like that. Mm. But
I couldn't tell.
Case.
I don't know. I thought it was going to be tied in with like, well, when did she announce that? Well, that would have been before SummerSlam, right? During these
pregnancy,
the whole filming
the pregnancy.
Yeah, maybe it was Naomi, after that.
Didn't she cash in like around SummerSlam?
Yeah, you're right. So this probably doesn't fall into the timing because all this season's going to end with like Brock at SummerSlam,
right?
So
yeah, honestly, my hopes aren't so high for it. I like after seeing the first season, one of my big complaints about it was that it only covers like a certain block rather than I think an extended period, which I feel might help it. It's also the type of show that we know by now, like isn't necessarily going to get so controversial. It's not really going to be that honest. But I also
But Paul Heyman can't watch it. It goes against the right. degradation of the business. This show.
But I think like the first season, I'll be watching it as a promotional vehicle, much like, you know, any wrestler cutting a promo or like a vignette, you know, to promote an upcoming wrestler. How great of a job does it do to get you interested in watching?
It's like your appeal to like, you know, a reality show. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like is there manipulation? Of course there is.
Yeah.
The Usos came out and they just did a promo from the crowd and they put over AJ and Dragon Lee. This is going to be their year and they're going to take on all teams. And I'm sure New Day were jumping at the opportunity for, they said anyone. So not a whole lot for them on this show other than showcasing them after the win.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish they at least like were faced with some set of challengers or something. This didn't really give me that much to get excited for.
Jackie Redmond brings out Stephanie Vaquer. They state she injured her ankle last Monday in the three-way with Nikki and Raquel, and she did not work any of the house shows over the last week. So how serious this is, or even like I would venture to guess this is probably an actual injury. How injured she is, I mean, they did a full-on attack angle here. So she just says 2025 was amazing. She gave most of her delivery in Spanish and the injury will not stop her. But Raquel will, because she drills her from behind, slams the ankle into the mat repeatedly, Tejana bomb, and then places a chair around the ankle when finally the officials stop her. But in classic WWE beatdown from the style guide, she is brought backstage afterwards and attacked a second time by Raquel. Just so you know, she's the secondary attack, always my favorite. And then Pierce kicks her out of the building.
I thought there was a good chance she would have done the secondary attack in the ring, but no, they gave us a commercial break to separate it. I thought Raquel did a really great job in this beatdown here. I thought she showed really good intensity, and it feels like, you know, she had it in the match last week, and I thought she carried it through here. So it feels like they're just giving Vaquer time off, you have to think, right? Coming off of something like this. And, you know, Raquel is getting a program coming out of it.
And no Nikki Bella on the show. Really no mention of Nikki Bella other than Stephanie Vaquer mentioning them. Mm-hmm. Rey Mysterio's hanging out with his pal Dragon Lee, gives him some words of encouragement after losing the tag belt, and Penta comes in, and he said he came back early because of the vision and what they've been doing. Rey says, the vision want to destroy the tradition of Lucha Libre. I'm like, do they? Is that on their mission list for 2026? I think they're pretty focused on this title that Punk has. I mean, Logan did cut the promo on Ray. He doesn't want him to be IC champion, but I don't know if that meant I'm going to take down Lucha. And then he says, they're trying to destroy the tradition of Lucha Libre, and you are the only one that can understand the tradition. It's like, I think there's 16,000 people every Friday night that know exactly what the tradition of a lucha is. And the fact that there is one company that's referring to lucha, your prized lucha, as no longer a sideshow.
Mm, yes. Did he actually say all this, or did you actually do some translating from the Spanish?
This was the English portion.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe he said a lot in Spanish to fill out the context here. I don't know about some of that.
I learned a lot about Lucha in these 2 minutes. Things I did not know beforehand, and the vision, like they're after the entire genre itself. So maybe they're secretly running AAA.
Maybe.
Lyra Valkyria against Liv Morgan. Lyra gets sent into the steps, and we go to a commercial where, I'm not kidding you, Heinz has licensed Jay-Z's public service announcement for its new line of flavored mayonnaise.
Yeah, is that so shocking?
Yes.
You think Jay-Z has that much integrity?
No.
That he wouldn't license his music out to make money?
Right here in Brooklyn, no less. Mm-hmm. He's a business man.
That's right.
So Bailey rallies, German tornado DDT, and then goes for the Nightwing that Liv turns into the Codebreaker. Perez pulls down the rope and Lyra crashes to the floor. Bailey goes after Perez and chases after her to the back after she snaps. And Lyra is left watching Bailey chase her to the back and yells, "Bailey!" And this leads to oblivion. This poor woman, I'm sorry. She is just like the worst handled any type of character in this universe. And Liv pins her in 8 minutes and 56. Bailey! Best finish of the year.
It's easy to get distracted, okay, when you're out there. Have you been in a wrestling match in the middle of the arena, okay?
I haven't, but if you randomly had my back and then you chase someone off with a chair, I'd be mesmerized. I'd lose sight of the goal.
So Liv's first match back, coming back from injury. I mean, I thought she looked about as good.
She did do the house shows over the weekend and got like strong babyface reactions. And working with, I believe she was working with Lyra on those shows.
I mean, understandable. She's way more over than Lyra Valkyria is.
Yeah.
And I thought like she looked perfectly fine, which is to say, like, I think kind of average. I mean, to me, Liv has never been such a standout in-ring performer, but where she does stand out is, especially now, her increased confidence being the Judgment Day's manipulator. So I think she's been doing great. I think her her out-of-ring, you know, posing mannerisms, like all of that feels very, very strong at the moment.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the post-wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
Jackie interviews a very subdued CM Punk. He says, "Everyone has an opinion about me because if they talk about themselves, nobody cares." I think that was I think that was our second reference to Kevin Nash by CM Punk over the last week.
Well, I see.
We were going to get t-shirtless Punk in this match. He says, "If I'm the underdog, then I've been underestimated, and I'm going to put Braun to sleep." So, simple promo. Saxton is with Theory, and Logan Paul gets the Netflix Byron Saxton commercial. And he says, "This is Brooklyn. You're broke in Brooklyn. This place is like Brooklyn." And Theory says, "Tonight is confirmation for Braun Breaker. It is the next step for the Vision." And then Logan was like a manager out of like 1970s WWF here, just going all over the place and compensating for Austin Theory, who is just a vacuum of charisma. And the Vision's time is now, they state.
Theory's next whole character seems to just be like strong and like somewhat silent, you know, like, and I'd say it's certainly an improvement over like the type of character he was, which was, I think, like an attempt to try to be like just a cocky young guy. Now he's much more serious, but standing next to Logan Paul, you know, say what you want about Logan Paul, like he's, I think, a very charismatic heel promo, and it just kind of makes Theory feel very forgettable.
Yo, putting these two together, it's like quite the contrast. I don't know if I would be separating these two.
It's not
or
like
isolating the two of them together.
It's not like Theory is so like physically intimidating that like he could just work being a quiet guy. He just, to me, doesn't offer a whole lot. At least I haven't seen it yet these few weeks in. And this week he didn't even get on the show proper.
Well, we've had 5 years. Like maybe it'll be the next five.
Maybe.
Blossom. Next week, so it's a ton of international shows this month, so we're going to have a lot of afternoon shows on Netflix. So SmackDown's in the afternoon this Friday, although it's in its normal time on USA. And then next week, 2 p.m. Eastern start from Dusseldorf with Gunther against AJ Styles, which as of now will be a 2.5-hour time limit.
Awesome.
Punk and Braun Breaker for the World Heavyweight Championship. Breaker is out first with Heyman, and then CM Punk comes out in a varsity jacket with the colors of the University of Michigan with his name on it. This was the greatest outfit that awesome. CM Punk has worn. What a great reference here.
Excellent. I mean, you know, when you could tell when Punk grew up watching all of this stuff. And they make so much reference to him being a Steiner. I guess I just, how long are they going to stick with Breaker?
Oh, they're not going to drop it at this point. It's been like 4 years he's been Braun Breaker.
But why fight it? You know, especially like if you're trying to like get this guy up to the very, very top. Breaker just sounds like such a stupid name. Like it's like a Dolph Ziggler level of stupid name, you know, that I just, can you imagine like going on Jimmy Fallon, Braun Breaker?
With 2 Ks. Yeah. It's such a goofy name. It was at the beginning, and now they're tied to it. So Michael Cole states that he has only seen two people progress as quickly as Braun Breaker has: Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar. And let it be known that from Lesnar's first bump to walking out of WWE was less time than Braun Breaker has been wrestling in WWE. His first half of his career was already over by this point. So it's all Breaker from the beginning. It's not all that compelling at this point. He's just beating down on Punk. And then he goes for a Breakensteiner. And what a disaster this Breakensteiner was. Braun was nearly broken as he dropped. And Punk, like, I don't know what Punk was doing here. Like, there was no way this guy was going over for this Breakensteiner. But they just try to play it off like, you know, Braun made a mistake and Punk is going to capitalize. And it's like, okay, like, just go with that. Like, you can just run with that. No, Braun's going to redo this one. I was like, why do we have to do this one over again? Like, you missed the spot. It's gone. Let's not call attention to it. I had far more of an issue with the follow-up than I did with, like, the obvious screw-up, because you just put like a giant flashlight on this by just going to it again. So Punk fights back. He mounts an offense with the elbow, goes for the GTS. Heyman is constantly getting involved, and Punk just cannot stop himself from having to focus on this menacing threat. The Vision run down, and it leads to a stomp by Austin Theory, which is a big near fall. And now the crowds, they're like, yes, we love close calls. And so Penta, Ray, and Dragon Lee all appear, CM Punk's buddies, and they fight off the Vision into the crowd. Breaker misses a spear into the corner, is hit with the GTS, and Breaker kicks out. Then Punk hits a very ugly-looking pile driver, only a two count, and goes for another.
So is the pile driver banned or not?
It wasn't banned here.
Like, didn't Owens receive some sort of punishment when he did his last year? Or did he not?
I think that was just the storyline. That was the...
Well, in story, isn't a pile driver still...
No, that was the package pile driver way. That was the thing Cody explained. Oh, there's the unwritten code. You don't do that.
It's the unwritten code. Got it. Okay.
You can't... It's okay to lift him up and drop him on his head, but if you...
Package
him? Yeah. We don't do that, okay? It's the unspoken word. But Braun's head like popped out of this as he was coming down. I was like, Jesus Christ, this did not look smooth. He goes for the GTS and Braun turns it into a Fujiwara armbar. Punk escapes to the Anaconda Vice. No Tenzon reference by Corey. And they make their way to their feet. And now Braun calls for the GTS, but Punk stops him and he applies the STF.
Tribute to Nikki Bella.
Oh, man, you beat me to my joke.
Sorry.
I was like, I thought we were going to get a thank you, Nikki chant. For no one's done this since Cena's retirement. I thought this would get a bigger reaction doing the STF. Like, it was fine.
Wait. Nikki Bella did do it. You mean as a tribute to Cena?
Yeah.
I guess so.
Anyway. Punk is... So Punk gives up on the STF because Heyman is on the apron, and Punk decks him, sends Heyman to the floor, and then Punk sends Breaker to the floor, and he goes for this suicide dive, and he gets forearmed coming down, and he just smashes onto the floor. Mm-hmm. He's placed onto the desk, and Breaker leaps off the buckle and puts both men through the desk. I thought Punk was dead here at this point from the suicide dive, and then this rolls Punk into the ring, and then he goes for one final running spear, but Punk catches him with a knee, hits the GTS, and he pins Braun in 26 minutes and 34 seconds. A pretty solid match, especially by the final 10 minutes. This was a long match, but this crowd was really hot, I would say, for everywhere from once they got into the near falls and the run-ins. Like it, it might be your like pattern for a big WWE main event, but man, it gets over most times. And yeah, you got a very, very solid main event, I thought.
They got the crowd into pretty high gear, I would say, by the end. And mm-hmm. surprisingly for me, like it really clicked with the run-ins with yeah. the three luchadors. Like they made a major difference here, this team of Rey, Dragon Lee, and Rey Mysterio. Crowd went crazy for them. So I like it personally. I hope the three of them stick around as a pair, perhaps attached to Punk. But it's sort of like breathing new life into, well, really all three of them. In a way that, you know, the LWO didn't even necessarily provide a Dragon Lee, for instance. So curious to see where they go with that. I thought Braun's offense looked really good all match. It's to me is his greatest feature. And you had some great battles over like submissions towards the end. Really great table break here, and then a face first dive from Punk, which added just a little bit of realism, you know, in terms of just like concern here. For the wrestlers,
he went so hard into that floor when he came down.
But I thought like it resulted in I think a very strong match to close the show, which makes for now 2 years in a row that Punk, you know, has headlined this Netflix anniversary show with a strong match.
What would you say is do you expect a rematch from these two?
Not prior to WrestleMania at this point.
Yeah,
like I don't think it needs to happen.
This would seem to slot Braun into the Rumble, you would think.
Yeah, okay.
Like, there was nothing here that necessitated, like, coming back with something like this. Like, even Becky and Maxine, like, left an open for a rematch. This one really doesn't call for any kind of rematch in the immediate future.
Yeah, to me, like, I feel it's pretty clear that Braun's direction would be Seth, provided that he's healthy anyway. And it would necessarily be the title picture with Punk. Eventually, like maybe by year's end, you might get this again. I certainly don't think it's, you know, I would expect Braun Breaker to be in the title scene certainly by the end of the year, before the end of the year. But I don't know if I see it before Mania.
So there you go. The Stranger Things edition of Raw. I thought overall, two very good matches, I thought, to bookend the show with the women's tag title match and then the world heavyweight title match, which altogether that was like 45 minutes of wrestling right there between those two matches. And
the bookends of the show.
That was it, yes. Yeah. And the rest, we got Gunther and AJ Styles next week and still have like two major shows coming up in the shortly with Saturday night's main event and Rumble to come. There's really nothing teased at all for the Rumble. Like we have not really done anything yet.
Not yet. Still feels a bit early.
You got like three Raws.
Yeah, those are all shows that they have to promote as well. You know, like Gunther AJ is the next big match that they're promoting. And we'll see on SmackDown.
All right, everybody, we are going to be taking feedback and hearing your thoughts. But if you are here on the YouTube channel, we will be back. Well, Poison Rana will have you covered on Tuesday night after New Year's Evil right here. And then Wednesday, we've got Pollock and Thurston at 1 Eastern and then Rewind to Dynamite Wednesday night after the show from Tulsa, Oklahoma. So hit the subscribe button and you will never miss a review each and every week. And if you are so inclined, postwrestlingcafe.com, you get the XL edition of this show, which includes your feedback and questions.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1 million percent. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.